Well, welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankum.
And part of the mission of the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter is to provide scholarships to service-oriented high school seniors.
Each year, approximately 50 deserving students are awarded scholarships to local colleges and trade schools.
If your family or business would like to join in providing scholarships to these future leaders by sponsoring a podcast, please contact us at byupodcast.slc@gmail.com, and we'd love to contact you. And each time we do one of these interviews, I feel more grateful than anybody, I think, by the opportunity that I have to get to know and learn from our amazing guests. And today is certainly no exception, where we are so blessed to have with us Elder John H. Groberg. Elder Groberg, who really needs no introduction, but I'm going to give one anyway, served as a missionary of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Tonga. He experienced much difficulty in getting to Tonga. He was prevented from arriving by strikes, visa problems, and transportation issues. Elder Groberg served briefly in Los Angeles, Samoa, and Fiji while waiting for his transport to be finalized. When he finally arrived in Tonga, his first assignment was on a remote island of Niuetoputapu. You said a lot better than me, which had only had limited contact with the outside world in the form of an occasional telegraph and a visiting boat. During the year he spent on the island, Elder Groberg suffered from mosquitoes, a typhoon, and starvation. And we can talk about your feet, too. His missionary companion was Feki Bo'uha, who would later serve as district president while Elder Groberg was president of the church's Tongan mission. Elder Groberg wrote a book about his mission from his memoirs called The Eye of the Storm, which was adapted into the 2001 Disney film, The Other Side of Heaven. Elder Groberg served as bishop in Idaho Falls from 1960 to 1965 and then returned to Tonga as president of the Tonga-Fiji mission, which was from 1965 to 1968. And then in 1970, Elder Groberg became a regional representative with the assignment to oversee the church's operations in Tonga. In 1976, Elder Groberg became an LDS general authority for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And in the mid-1990s, he was president of the church's Asia area, where he was closely connected with the initial sending of missionaries to Cambodia. And he and his wife, Jean, have been married for 64 years and have 11 children. Did I get that all correct?
The only thing is that the years I was mission president was 1966 to 69, rather than 65. Okay. All right. 68. 1 year doesn't make that much difference.
Hey, well, and I'm sorry for reading such a lengthy. Honestly, we do get the opportunity to interview some amazing guests, and really, you truly need no introduction. Although we were joking a little bit beforehand that you're probably, I feel like I'm talking with a celebrity, because my kids, they're like, how often do you have a general authority that a movie is made after?
Yeah.
How was that process, Elder Groberg, of having that?
Very interesting.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
I was approached, and of course I was a general authority, so I went to the first presidency to see what they thought about it. President Monson is the one that had asked me to write the book about my first mission experience. I had never thought of writing a book, but when an apostle asks you to do something, you do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I did it, and when he found out that the movie was going to be based on that book that he had asked me to write, he said, I think you ought to go ahead, as long as they stay close to the book and not get way out. So that was, and of course they have a hard time. The book was about 300 pages, and in a normal movie script you can handle about 100 pages. Hmm. So they either had to leave two-thirds out or do a lot of combining, and so that's what they did. It was true to the book. When it first came out, President Tinkley and President Monson and President Faust were the first presidency at that time, and they said, we'd like to see it before it goes public, and so they invited all the general authorities to the, right here in this, the, I don't know,
yeah,
what
the,
they call
the,
it?
The Legacy Theater.
Legacy, yeah. Oh. And showed it there. And when we got through, we were all, what do you think? And President Hinckley stood up and he said, I like it. I think it'll do a lot of good. Congratulations. And went off.
Wow.
So they, I think they did a very good job.
Yeah, Yeah. And then what was the workings as far as, did you ever imagine they would do a part two with your other book? Or
again, President Monson kind of encouraged me to write. The first book was about my mission. Then later he said, you know, I think it's done a lot of good. Why don't you write one about when you went back as mission president? So I did that, and when some of the same people, not all of the same people, but some of the same people years later came back and said, we'd like to make a movie out of this. At that time, President Monson was president of the church. And so, of course, I went to him again, and he said, same as before. They'll do, if they'll stay close to the book, I think you ought to do it.
Yeah.
So they took a few more liberties on that than they did on the first one, in the sense that they brought things that happened a long time ago and put them here. It was that combining type thing, and taking experiences from here and here and kind of putting them together to make the story. So all the things happened, but not necessarily in the sequence that it showed there.
Yeah, usually it's a timeline issue, right?
Right.
To fit into a movie and whatnot. And any word of a part three? I mean, trilogies are sort of a thing, but maybe the general authority years. I don't know. Yeah.
I think we've had enough of
okay,
that.
Okay, all right.
I do have to say, too, there's he's a member of the church. McKay Coppins is a writer for the Atlantic, and I saw him write about that maybe one of the things we can do as a church is have more cultural cachet, if you will. And these are the kinds of things, I think, with faith-inspiring stories that people actually enjoy reading and listening to are awesome. So yeah. I think it's a great thing that you did that.
Well, I give most of the credit to President Monson, because I would have never written the book, and then there would never have been a film, and there wouldn't have been a film either without his encouragement.
Yeah,
and so
that's
forth.
Great.
So.
Well, today we had the wonderful opportunity for you to speak with our group about life's lessons, and I wonder if you could take a couple of minutes and maybe summarize what you talked about today.
Well, you summarize what you summarize what you summarize. It's a process, isn't it? Well, I first of all asked if anyone in the room was over 88 years of age, and no one was. So I said, well, I guess I've got y'all beat on experience then. And I just had four major points that I tried to emphasize. One is that everyone on the earth is the spiritual offspring of heavenly parents. Therefore, in a very real sense, we are brothers and sisters. And we've been asked to be our brothers and sisters' keepers. Our own siblings, generally, we do feel that way. If they're in trouble, we try to help them. And there's some fighting and things that go on in siblings. But to realize that everyone is literally our brother and sister in a spiritual way should make us want to do better in helping. Just that's what we're here to do, is to help. And so that's really the first point that I've learned. And part of that was from my mission, too. I mentioned that growing up in Idaho Falls, we had very limited contact with people of color. And by color, I mean just anyone that's not white. And so when I went to Tonga, and everyone was non-white, you had to learn something new. And I am as grateful as I can be for the opportunity to learn that regardless of color, language, ethnic origin, any of those things, even religion, we are all brothers and sisters. And I learned to love the Tongan people as much as I learned to love my own brothers and sisters. I mean, they are literally. And from that, the whole world. And I think, so that's kind of the first point. The second point I made was that being brothers and sisters, we need to learn to love God so that by loving him, he can show us how to love one another. That's why he put the first commandment to love God, and the second to love thy neighbor as thyself, is because he doesn't just want you to love your neighbor in any way. He wants you to love your neighbor like he loves you. So you need to learn how that kind of, and it's sacrifice and it's work and it's sun rising on the evil and the good, you know, all of those types of things. So I think that was the second point, is to, in our families, and we're all members of some kind of a family, not necessarily a husband and wife, but we're all a son or a daughter of someone, mm-hmm. and we're all part of a family, and we're all part of a bigger family too, that's the place to learn to help one another. Then the third point I made was that there is always more we can do than we think we can. There's something additional. When we reach the end of our rope, there's one more step. And I used a clip from the film where we were trying to get to an island to teach a family, and the wind quit. And we only had sailboats then. So when the wind quits, you don't go. And I just wondered what to do. And we prayed. No wind came, and one of the men on the boat said, "Hop in the little dinghy, the little lifeboat, and I'll row you to shore." And we made it just in time to meet the family. And I said, you know, the lesson I've learned from that is that having faith is more than praying and waiting for the wind to blow. Having faith is praying and being willing to get in the boat and row. Hmm. There's something more we can do, and the Lord will bless us. And he blessed this man with strength. He rowed for several hours. Hmm. That's a lot of energy. Yeah. Then the fourth point that I made was that not only is there more we can do, but when we're at our extremities, there's more help available than we think. You could give 100 examples of who was it? Elisha said that they that are with us are more than those that are against us, and so forth. But this was a personal example of when I was thrown out of a boat in a storm, and I ran out of energy. I didn't want to quit, but after you swim for a few hours in heavy seas, your muscles just, you can't go anymore. Yeah. And as I was possibly sinking for the possible last time, just as clear as anything, my girlfriend, we were not engaged, but we were writing to each other. Just a vision of her came, and her voice came to my mind and said, "Oh, come on, John, get up, get going. The island's right over there." And I don't know what happened, but that infused an energy in me that just, I rose up, and there were, right where she said it would be. Mm. And I realized that is, that's typical. It's not, the help doesn't always come from angels or this. It comes from angels, but heavenly angels. Just the fact that I'm sure she was praying at the time, bless John on his mission, and that message just got through. There is always more help. So those were the kind of the four points, and then I concluded with a quote from President Brimhall. Maybe should I just?
Yes, please.
Sure. He was president of BYU for about 20 years back in the early days. And he just wrote this: "The aim of man's existence is that he may have more joy than sorrow in the sum of life, build rather than destroy, help rather than hurt, to seek the truth, love man and God, and in his work be glad, be much more moved by love of good than by the fear of bad." I've always liked that quote because so often we think, oh, I don't want to do that because that... And that's fine. We need to have limitations. But our main emphasis ought to be, hey, I can do some more good. I can help. I can help more. And when we need help, the best thing we can do is to give help. And I just know for sure that we'll receive help.
Mm-hmm. It's powerful. And remind me, what years were you the temple president at Idaho Falls Temple?
From 2005 to 2008.
Okay, that's what I thought. So my wife and I, we were sealed there in 2006, so under your presiding there, yeah. Special time for us. What could, and I know you've written a whole book about the temple. What, maybe just leave us like with one thought or perspective related to the temple that that would be helpful or insightful.
Well, we all know that the temple is the house of God, and a house has two meanings. One of them is, of course, family.
Yeah.
The house of David or the house of Solomon or whatnot. And the other is a place of residence. And so being the house of the Lord means that His Spirit is there, but also it means not only that He resides there, but it also means that that's where our family relationship is. That's where teaching goes on. And so I think if we just look at the temple as, I know we say, well, we help our relatives and our friends and ancestors and so forth, and that's true, but do you ever feel that, to feel that it's important, you have to feel His Spirit, to feel this love that comes from Him. So I would say, yes, go to the temple with the idea of increasing your love for the Lord, and you'll automatically increase your love for your fellow man.
Hmm. Love it. Thank you. Awesome.
Thank you so much, Brother Groberg. We're so grateful for you, for your time to come out and speak with us today, to be on our podcast, and for the wonderful lessons in the Spirit that we felt today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back again next month with our next episode of the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast. Have a great day.